This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. You've made the commitment.
You caught the vision.
You want your family to serve God.
But sometimes it's hard to put feet on that vision. Hey, Hal, do visions have feet?
How do you get from principle to practice?
What do you need to know about the issues affecting your family?
How do you apply God's Word in the 21st century?
Let's talk about it.
This is Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young.
Well, hello, and welcome to Making Biblical Family Life Practical. This is Hal.
And this is Melanie.
And we appreciate you joining us, and we apologize for a few minutes late start here. That is my fault, bad planning on my part, and then a technical difficulty that just nailed the coffin lid. So I apologize for those of you listening live, and thank you for your patience sticking around with us. All right, tonight we are going to be talking about a follow-up from last week's program. We're talking about how to be a faithful Christian while a student on a secular college campus. Well, this week we're going to be joined again by John Calvin Young, our oldest son, to talk about making the transition from homeschooling high school into a successful college career as a homeschool graduate. I want to welcome John.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here tonight.
And we are glad to have you here. Well, just kind of to recap, last week we talked a little bit about your background, John, but you were homeschooled from the beginning.
Yes.
And graduated in 2008, I believe, and went from there to?
Washington Lee University.
Right.
Private school up in Mounds, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And you spent 3 of your 4 years in college there and 1 year at?
Oxford University in the UK. Quite a privilege.
Yes. Right.
Yes. An amazing year.
Home. Yes.
Okay, and so you had an awful, terrible time getting anyone to take you seriously because you were homeschooled, right?
Oh, scarcely not.
Okay.
For the vast majority, my academic credentials were respected by everybody I met,
mm-hmm.
and felt that I really did feel like I was excellently prepared for university education.
Good job, Melanie. Great.
Yeah. That's encouraging.
That's great. That is good. Well, you know, that was a real encouragement to us when we started, you know, going with you on campus visits and you know, you were taking your transcript into this academic world. People did not blink at the fact that you were homeschooled. I mean, that there were colleges were beyond allowing homeschoolers in. They were welcoming you.
They were recruiting.
Yeah.
I remember probably most of the colleges we went to had an admissions counselor that specifically was set aside to recruit homeschoolers.
Yes,
definitely.
Well, you know, I want to talk about what it takes to be academically successful in college, because I think a lot of us moms worry about that. We wonder how our kids are going to cope, you know, if what we've taught them in high school, in homeschool high school, is going to translate into college. You know, what was your experience when you first started college? What was your experience? You know, how did you feel in those classes academically, and how did you feel? Did you feel like your homeschool preparation, how did that impact your first year of college?
That's a very interesting question. I can remember my very first class meeting of this new career in university clearly, and it was at 8:30 a.m. on the first morning following a major party night on campus. So showing up sober and reasonably well-dressed definitely didn't hurt me in my professor's eyes.
Made a good first impression.
Definitely. when half class is hungover, it's not hard. But as I got into that first year, I was in several extremely challenging courses. I came in with a large load of AP credits, so they weren't all beginning-level courses. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things I did see was that as a homeschooler, I was used to thinking through what I was learning and synthesizing it on a level that many of my peers did not, even in a very high-achieving atmosphere, many students had not fully learned those patterns of self-teaching to a degree, you know, mm-hmm. all the didactism, to use the wrong word, that most homeschoolers acquire natively by necessity.
You know, I remember you making the observation that it seemed like a lot of your classmates just weren't used to managing themselves, that they were used to being spoon-fed and led by the hand, and, you know, maybe they had the intelligence to understand material and to test well, but when it came to taking responsibility for themselves as a student, you found a lot of your classmates just didn't have it.
That's definitely true, and I can say it's not at all limited to public school students. In fact, somebody asked me what would I say was the single biggest thing I would say to a student going into college in any given college situation. I'd say keep a schedule. That as homeschoolers, we become addicted to our flexible time, and where the schedule really can shift on the calendar, on the daily schedule. It's all kind of flexible, and college by necessity isn't. Sometimes you can get away without a written formal schedule, but most of the time you will need it. Colleges will try to give you a good education, but they don't care about you like your mother or your father do,
yeah.
And they won't check up. If you forget something, like it's not, you will fail it.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good point because, you know, I admit the flexibility does make you kind of relax your routine some. I know that you encounter the same thing when you work from home. It's very tempting to say, well, you know, I'll get around to it. I can do it this afternoon or I can do it tomorrow if necessary. But you can't do that when you're working for somebody else or when you're studying under somebody else's guidance like that. And I remember you talking about just keeping track of assignments, you know, not just the daily schedule of being in class on time, but I remember you talking about professors giving assignments and giving out a syllabus and students just somehow didn't know how to process that.
Yeah, that's very crucial, are the longer term things, not so much the due tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
particularly realizing that most college courses are not everyday affairs.
Right.
And so you'll have a minimum of 2 days before the next deadline, usually. It's really easy to see that as being a date in the future at 2 days or 4 days or
mm-hmm.
6 days or a month and just push it off and
right.
come back to it later. And the level of homework and level of execution that's needed for a major paper or for a midterm assignment or something can't really effectively be left last minute. I mean, I thrive on deadlines personally, but my grades would be a whole lot better if I'd taken some of those assignments and started them a week ahead instead of 24 hours ahead.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And if you can do it that way, it's not neither healthy nor safe in an academic sense to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So keeping a schedule is critical, keeping a calendar of when assignments are due. Thinking ahead is critical.
I'll also plan out how long it's going to take you. I know you don't know that the first week, but, you know, at a certain point I realized in my Chinese homework, this is going to take me 8 to 12 hours in the course of the week to execute the homework due on Friday. And when
you
look at your schedule, you need to go pull a block and say, you know what, that's going to take a full evening, and that whole afternoon I don't have a class on to execute this homework, or else I'm going to be up all night Thursday night.
Yeah, you're in trouble if you wait to start till Thursday at 10 p.m., then you walk into class and miss late.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's kind of self-correcting.
Maybe, if you can learn from it.
Yeah. Talk to us a bit about classroom interaction, because you had not been in a classroom much before you went to college.
That's a good point, because I think up to that time, correct me if I'm wrong, John, but if memory serves, up to that time, I don't think you had been in a formal structured classroom situation except for, like, you know, debate.
Yeah, but they had debate classes.
Driver's ed, debate classes, and that Chinese class we took in Mali.
Yeah.
Which was a Saturday
back.
Class, and you and I did that together.
It's still a little informal.
So talk to these kids about classroom interaction. What's some advice you would give them about being in a classroom?
Let's see. That's a very interesting question, and it ties in several things I was hoping we touch on tonight. To start with, respect the professor's time. When you come in there, walk in with having read the assignment you were given, having covered the material that you're expected to have read. That's just really crucial to be able to give the professor a fair listening, a fair hearing for what he's about to present.
Mm-hmm.
That hour-long presentation, he may have given 10,000 times the course of a 40-year career, or he may have just spent 8 hours compiling the information over the past. He may have been up all night preparing that.
And
it happens.
Professors are people too.
Yeah.
And what I found out is that if I did the pre-reading assignment and I was prepared for class, it made me stand out.
Definitely. I remember that first morning, just being in there and paying attention, and then 8:30, the next class meeting, there were so many students who didn't have their ducks in a row. If you could just walk in having read the material, you could understand what's being said, and you could have an intelligent question at the end or in the middle if it needed clarification. You stood out. In fact, that puts me in mind something an old instructor in high school told me that stuck with me into college and has helped me in every classroom situation I've ever been. He said, in a classroom, everybody does eventually start to kind of blend together. But, he said, if you sit in the front row, the professor notices that. He said, so many people flee the front row. He said, go ahead and sit there, even if it's slightly more awkward and you feel like there's nobody in the room but you and the professor. He said, you know what? If you have a question, your question will get answered instead of the person in the back row.
Mm-hmm.
He said, and the professor will notice, and he'll like it if you're sitting up there. Now, don't sit in the front row and go to sleep. I did try that once or twice and didn't end well.
Yeah.
But sit in the front row and pay attention, and it counts for something with most professors, and that's something very valuable. And well, when it comes time to grade and be a little more lenient or a little more strict, when it comes time to decide if you're going to write, if the professor's going to write a recommendation for you or not, being the person who sat in the front row will count for something.
Well, yeah, that brings up something I notice. We teach mm-hmm. a lot of different things, mm-hmm. and you teach because you have a passion for the material, and it's so demoralizing to walk into a room with a passion for the material and the people don't care.
And we do have some. I mean, I could think of specific instances where in some places you go in and the room is full and people have notebooks ready and they're eager and they're responsive. But we've
that's
given
a delight
some,
to teach.
And that's
the crowd.
Yeah, yeah, you feel like that's why we do this. But
and
then
we give a couple,
times,
like speaking, I remember we spoke for a parenting group for public school where the people were basically required to be there. And they were a dead audience. It was hard to teach them. It was really hard to teach them because you couldn't tell how what you were saying was getting across.
Or if it was getting across at all.
Or if they even understood it. And so I think to become a professor, you have to spend so many years of preparation that they have a real passion for it. And I think if you show the slightest bit of interest,
and that leads me to something else, too. Many homeschool students have been told, and they're afraid, justifiably, of meeting that atheistic professor that can't wait to shove his opinions in your face and is going to grade you down just because you disagreed. I recall one of the first few class meetings of a class with professors reputed to be the most difficult to live with of all the politics department. In fact, he would unlock the door when class started so you couldn't get in if you were more than, 3 minutes late.
Wow.
And he would fail you if you missed three classes.
Wow.
That was a sort of tough professor.
Brutal.
And one of the first few meetings, he was running along on a subject and decided to talk about Catch-22 situations. He wanted to say, at least for the purposes of the class, that every moral code has a situation where it would be right to break it. I couldn't agree with that. So I stood up and I engaged him on it, politely, respectfully, mm-hmm. but disagreed.
Yeah.
And what's more, could defend it logically and with respect. It wasn't merely assertion that he was wrong or a slam against him personally.
Mm-hmm.
We argued for 10 minutes. I'm sweating blood. I'm thinking, my first politics class in university, I am going to fail.
Yeah.
After 10 minutes, he kind of trailed off and he said, well, let's move on to a different subject. And by midterms, I had one of the best grades in the course. Finished the class with an A and became my advisor and a friend to this day.
Yeah.
Even though we disagreed, the fact that I could show him respect and care about the subject as much as he did, even if I disagreed deeply, mattered and mattered very intensely to a professor who'd spent his entire life trying to teach students who didn't really want to be taught.
And you became one of his all-time favorite students.
I think I could fairly say I did.
Okay, we need to take a break.
Oh, we do, don't we?
Hang on just a second. We have some really neat things coming up, folks.
Yes, we do.
Next week, mm-hmm. on Monday and Tuesday, we're speaking in Northern Virginia.
Yes.
Head out to our website and click on events to see the details about that.
Right. We are going to be speaking to support groups in Manassas, Virginia, and Culpeper, Virginia. And this is going to be good. We have spoken at Culpeper before. It's a great group of people up there. We're looking forward to it. Manassas will be a new one for us, but they're not far apart. So if you are anywhere in Northern Virginia, please check out our website, raisingrealmen.com, and go to the speaking page and see what you can see there on the schedule.
Also, mm-hmm. we are going to be, Lord willing, in the Colorado area,
mm-hmm.
leading a live boot camp 9 to 12 in a few weeks. We're excited about that. And then we're going to be at Jeunesse Park, J-E-N-N-E-S-S,
yes.
where for their homeschool family camp. It's going to be a blast. We're teaching for several days on breaking the siege.
Right.
We've got these castles, and we feel like the culture's out there attacking us.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to get out and attack the culture back.
That's true. And, you know, I think that's a good thing you bring up there. We're talking with John Calvin Young. He's our son. He's a graduate of Washington and Lee University, an alumnus of Oxford University in England. And we are talking about what it takes to become a successful college student when you have graduated from homeschooling. And John was just talking about his first challenge to his philosophy and worldview that he encountered there in the classroom. And, you know, he pointed out two important things, I think. Number one, that you were willing to engage a professor when he made an outrageous statement as a proposition, but you did it with respect. You did it, you know, recognizing his authority in the classroom and his role as an instructor, so you didn't just blow him up. But I think it's also important to notice that, you know, yes, there are outrageous people there, and we do read about it. But more often, I think we encounter that a serious academic, no matter what his philosophy, appreciates a student who's willing to engage the material. And the
especially
fact that,
if you bring evidence to the table.
I should speak to this just a second.
Yeah.
So it's important to choose your battles. Don't necessarily fight a battle that you're not prepared to give a good showing in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the fact that something was said in class doesn't mean you have to believe it.
Right,
but,
and you don't have to argue about, you don't have to fight every battle.
Right.
So choose wisely. Also, although it is definitely possible to disagree with the professor, and usually, as we said, if you're prepared mm-hmm. for it and respectful, it's not going to hurt you. There are a few crazy professors who will take it out on you. And what's more, there are some professors who are generally dangerous. You may need to pick and choose which courses, which topics you honestly want to take or have the extra space in your life to take and study for. I recall one particular course, actually with the same professor 3 years later, which was a brilliant course studying the difference between, you might say, the humanistic tradition of Greece and the tradition in philosophy. Stemming from Jerusalem, it's the classic Athens v. Jerusalem.
Yeah.
In the course of a course with a professor who doesn't believe in God but believes that Genesis is still important enough to be read.
Mm-hmm.
That was a pretty incredible experience. I recall one weekend where I just finished a book. I spent 3 days lying on the couch thinking and praying.
Mm-hmm.
That it was
yeah.
such a deep challenge on one level to my philosophy and mental uh-huh. makeup. I had to understand how it fit in and where it disagreed with Scripture. Because I knew parts of it were right, but not all.
Yeah.
And that three-day period was crucial. I came out of it whole, enjoyed it greatly, and got things out of the course. And the next term, I decided not to take the next course he was offering because it was my last term. I was finishing up my honors, my final project, capstone. And knew I was not going to have that sort of time yet.
And so it's important to judge, do you have the time to engage a course that is philosophically challenging, and do you have the spiritual strength? Because you need to make these decisions carefully. You need to read ratemyprofessor.com and
mm-hmm.
see what other students have said about this professor. Talk to people. Yeah. Google their name and look up what you find out about
them.
They publish what their associations are and their history.
And recognize that subject areas where you don't feel certain are not a good place to take that challenging professor.
Well, particularly things like comparative religion.
Yes.
Or psychology.
Philosophy. Biology
yeah.
is
and
a
And I'm saying that as someone yep. who loves philosophy. I
right.
mean, that, that's
right.
someone who has deeply enjoyed me in these discussions.
But
choose wisely.
Well,
I'm saying don't take on something you're not prepared to fight, not prepared to live out.
And also, you know, and if an engineer builds a bridge wrong, it falls down. Engineering is self-correcting. Bad philosophy is not self-correcting until we face God.
Too often that's the case, isn't it? And,
yeah. One more thing I want to ask about interaction class.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about asking questions, interacting with the professor, just on normal, ordinary stuff. You had an interesting experience that just cracked me up.
Yes. I know it's exactly which one you're talking about. Strangely, in some of the classroom environments I've been in, there seems to be a sort of classroom prejudice against asking questions. Not on the part mm-hmm. of the professor. professors love questions, honestly.
Yeah.
Unless it's something really weird or it tries to throw them off,
mm-hmm.
you know, just designed to make them look bad, most professors are delighted to get questions. But I remember one particular time when two homeschool freshmen who had had a lot of AP courses and were coming along in economics got into an upper-level economics course that was taught by a really excellent professor, about 12 or 13 in the class. And I and my friend both asked just the questions that occurred to us. And just in case you're wondering, we didn't monopolize the time or anything. But after a week or two, I started realizing somehow 80% of the questions in the class,
mm-hmm.
and by from what the professor seemed, how he reacted, these weren't stupid questions. These weren't mm-hmm. just because we were freshmen. 80%+ of the questions in the class were being asked by the two of us in a class of 12 to 13 people, all the rest of whom were mostly sophomores and juniors.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually got pulled aside by one of those upper classmen and lambasted
mm-hmm.
for asking questions, not for distracting the class, although, I mean, it's quite possible to throw in something so off field that you distract the whole class.
But that wasn't it.
Not monopolizing them just because we were asking questions, I think kind of making them look bad.
And it wasn't cool.
It just somehow wasn't done. And something my friend and I eventually kind of decided on, we still ask the questions. And just think about your question. Think about whether it will benefit anyone else in the class or just you.
Mm-hmm.
Think about whether it's in tune with where the class is going or if it's going to pull it off track. Well, ask those questions, and then if you do have things that are more personal, that are just your own curiosity or something, take the office hours later. Walk the professor back home to his office after class. Stay behind and talk, and most professors are delighted for someone to show interest.
I want to talk about that for a minute, because something that I realized, I think you mentioned you had not, Hal,
that I didn't,
is that professors have a huge amount of latitude in grading and in advancing you and different things like that. They have a huge amount of latitude.
Recommendations when you're trying to get in grad school.
Yeah, and that, you know, if you're right on the borderline of A, B, if you have an 89, that professor can decide whether to give you a B or decide whether to give you an A. And one of the ways they decide is
based on who they know. Who do they recognize in class when they're sitting on the front row? Who asks questions? Whose papers they particularly enjoy, and who shows up for office hours. Every professor in almost any institution is going to post as part of that syllabus, part of that document you hand at the beginning of the course, and save it. It's critical. when they will make themselves available. There'll be a two to ten hours in the course of the week when they will know that they will be in their office or in a particular place, and you can come and meet them and ask them questions, ask them for advice. You know, you can even bring them a draft of a paper sometimes, and sometimes they'll even look over it and tell you if they think that it's headed on the right course or if it's going to be graded badly when they see it for real.
And that sounds like cheating, but no, it's getting help.
The professors love to help as to actually care.
They want kids to learn.
And guess what? Those 8 hours wherever in their office will really more if the students don't show up.
Yeah.
So you can often end up in there for an hour with your professor outside of class time, no one else asking questions. Ask the questions you want to ask. Those office hours are critical. In fact, you'll find out a few professors, and for some people, it's actually the time when they do the brunt of their teaching. The lectures for them are a little bit of an afterthought, but the brunt of their teaching is that one-on-one because that's how they like to interact.
You know,
you don't want to find that out at the end of a term, let's just say.
Well, I've got a story to tell on that, and this is, I think this is a critical thing, that when I was in my final semester of college, I got hung up on a required course and did not get a passing grade in it. And
well, you had to have not just a passing grade, but you had to have a high enough grade,
a C or better. And I'm sorry, I just didn't get it. And
I was distracting you too much.
Well, that's okay. I won at the end. But I come back. I had to put off graduation until later in the summer and come back for a summer term to take just that course. And it was hard enough, even when I was concentrating on just that course, I still only managed to pull out a C. But I saw the professor in the hallway when I'm back in the summer. It's already, the die is cast. And he said, "Hal, I didn't realize you'd been in the honors program. Gee, if I'd known that, we could have done some extra credit work or something and maybe got that grade up." And I'm thinking, I missed that opportunity. I mean, I had no idea that it would have made a difference if he had known me other than as a name on a list of 30 students. And you know what? that was a lesson I learned too late. But now we managed to bring that to our children, to our sons, as they graduate and move off to college, to say, look, professors are people too. They do have latitude in grading, and it's to your benefit, you know, academically and in other areas, to know the professor and to be known to them.
Yes.
You know, and it's, here's an important thing too, to get this across to your young students. It is not playing favorites. It is not brown nosing or sucking up to the professor to be a good student and to show interest in the course. Because you don't
no matter what your friends say.
And you don't even have to like the professor to be engaged with the material and to ask intelligent questions, because your goal as a student is to learn material, right? And so you want, as you go into that environment, you want to do everything you need to do to make that time as effective as possible. And that includes go talk to your professor, get to know your professor, ask questions. And sometimes if you're on the border, go before the end of the semester and say, I need to pull this grade up. Can I do some extra work?
And honestly, they have tremendous latitude to do that, and we've seen it with our children, to go and tell a professor, you know what, I blew it. I missed this assignment. I didn't do well on that test.
Or I was sick during the exam or whatever
but
it was.
I'm working my way through college, or yeah. I don't want to lose my scholarship. Can you help me? What can I do? Is there anything I can do to bring that grade up? And lots of times, we've seen it happen with our kids. They might give you an extra test, give you an extra assignment, but professors want to be the good guys. They want to help you. John, I had another question, just a couple of quick questions, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What one piece of advice would you give a freshman? Where is a freshman likely to get in trouble academically? What one piece of advice would you give a freshman student academically?
Aside from everything we've talked about so far, I'd have to say that the one thing we haven't covered is it's really crucial to get good grades in those first few easy courses. Because particularly if you're on scholarship, I was, many of you will be, it is crucial not to lose that scholarship. And if you can get a buffer of a few good courses, you know, if you have a 4.0 term or even just a good one, if it's not 4.0, I never had one, then that will help your average for years to come. It'll insulate you from having some of those worst courses. You don't, you know, if you need to not dip below a 3.0 or something,
because
it can keep you safe.
Every major has a weeder course. Every major has a course that is very hard to pass, no matter how intelligent you are. No matter how prepared you are, no matter how hard you work.
Yep.
And getting the good grades early can help insulate you, just like you said, from trouble.
That's right.
What one piece of advice would you give a senior in college who may be
in high school, you mean?
No, in college.
In college. Oh, okay.
What one piece of advice would you give a senior in college who may be distracted by a girl he's interested in, or a job he's interested in, or a graduate school he's interested in?
Or a crisis in your family.
I think I've got to cheat with this one and give you two.
Okay.
Go ahead.
First is, think of the future. Prepare for the future. Plan for that job, that world after graduation, and have multiple plans. If plan A goes all right, you need to have plan B. If plan B, plan C, and plan D go all right, as is quite possible, I sure hope you have a plan E.
Because the economy is tough right now.
The economy is really tough, and just like when you applied for college, you didn't just put in one application and you didn't just plan for one possible result. You need to have some safety options. At the very least, have your resume out with some recruiters and have some options so that when grad school results come in or when that job you're waiting on comes back, if it didn't happen, you got something else. The other side of that, though, is think about the present, because this may be your last chance to have the sort of freedom just to stop and think and read and study, and that be your number one priority. Use that library. Go sit in the library and read a book. Even if it's not for your course, this is a precious piece of time. And the atmosphere of college has a lot of negative things. There's a lot of precious things, too, as you'll find out when you leave. So think of the present, too, and don't ignore that either. Savor it for those last few months.
Wow, that's good advice, John.
And, you know, I remember my own father. He was not what I would call an academic or scholar. He got a college degree and did well with it. But one of the few regrets he said about his college time was, you know, I wish I had gone to hear some of those speakers. I wish I had gone to some of those cultural events, because it'll never be easier. You'll never have some of those opportunities again. So go ahead, go ahead and do the extra work it takes to make that concert, or to go hear that visiting lecturer, or whatever it is, because that time on your college campus is the time to do that.
I'll tell you what, I have the same regret. My biggest regret about college is that I got so busy in the mundane, I missed an incredible opportunity to hear people speak, that now I would travel halfway across the country to hear them speak. And, yeah, it's easy to get short-sighted in college. So, anyway, I think this has been really helpful. Thank you for joining us, John.
Thank you very much.
Yes, indeed. And just kind of to summarize again, we've been talking with John Calvin Young. He's our oldest son. He's a graduate of Washington Lee University. His advice to a homeschooler coming into the academic world is get a calendar, get a schedule, and make your hours regular, because college is not going to wait around for your flexible homeschooling mind to catch up.
Get to know your professor.
Mm-hmm.
Interact in class. Talk to him after class. Ask questions. Go to office hours, because your professor can make or break that course for you.
Don't be afraid to be challenged on your faith or on your worldview, but choose your battles and choose your professors, and recognize that sometimes you have got a stressful situation. You don't have the emotional reserve or the time to bone up and take those kind of challenges. So that may be the semester that you don't choose the challenging professor. So, I mean, all these things, great advice, good experience, because you've lived it out.
Yes, we so appreciate you being here, John.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us, folks.
Yes.
We will see you next week on Making Biblical Family Life Practical.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, please head out to our site, RaisingRealMen.com. Got a lot of great things going on,
mm-hmm,
and some exciting opportunities for you. Check out, we've got a new session of Bootcamp 9 to 12 starting, and a new session of Pre-Flight, which is our session for teens.
Okay, thanks. So until then, I'm Hal.
And I'm Melanie.
Thanks, and God bless you.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/HalandMelanie. Or Facebook.com/RaisingRealMen. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you, and God bless you for listening.